Today, is the tech bloodbath really over? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, on the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's market review, as normal, we'll start in the US, go across to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia. On Friday, there was a robust, broad-based rally across Wall Street as markets looked over more encouraging economic data and a sunnier earnings outlook. This, despite the upcoming Federal Reserve policy meeting next week. The FOMC decision is widely expecting a unanimous vote for at least one last major rate increase, though with the Fed's preferred price measure still slowing inflation is running hot, that might make it harder for them to set up a possible downshift in its rate hike pace for the December meeting. That said, despite data on Thursday showing a strong rebound in US gross domestic product in the third quarter, demonstrating the resilience in the world's largest economy and oil consumer, and an acceleration with inflation, strong consumer spending data, and a robust labour market, much of Wall Street is growing confident that the Fed will pause tightening once they take the Fed funds rate to 4.5 to 4.75% next quarter, to the point where financial markets have now priced in an 84.5% likelihood of a fifth consecutive 75 basis point rate increase at the conclusion of the Fed's November 1-2 policy meeting, and a 51.4% chance the central bank will deaccelerate to 50 basis points in December. In addition to the FOMC decision, traders will also be closely monitoring the non-farm payroll report. The strong labour market is still expected to show job growth, with 200,000 jobs created in October, down from the 263,000 created in the prior month. The unemployment rate is expected to tick higher, and wage gains are expected to slow. So all major US indices ended the session up around 2.5% or more, with the S&P and the NASDAQ notching their second straight weekly gains. The blue chip Dow posted its fourth consecutive Friday-to-Friday advance and its biggest weekly percentage gain since May. As a result, the bulls are back, even if largely driven by hopium, remembering the bulk of economists are still seeing a US recession likely next year. This has been one of the best months so far in the history of the Dow, suggesting the bear market likely ended, said Ryan Detrick, chief market strategist at Carson Group. Big monthly moves historically happen at the end of bear markets. This is the second Friday in a row we've seen aggressive buying, suggesting investors are growing more comfortable holding over the weekend, he added. Though actually, it was a 7.6% rebound in Apple that helped soften the blow of the 6.8% plunge for Amazon shares in the wake of the two market leaders' results. And solid earnings beats from Chevron, ExxonMobil, and other companies outside the tech and tech-adjacent mega group brightened aggregate earnings estimates for the quarter. Anything energy-related, frankly, is doing well for now, given the higher prices. Indeed, the huge third-quarter profits feeding criticism from consumer groups in the US and Europe meant that US President Joe Biden told oil companies they're not doing enough to bring down energy costs. Overall, analysts now see third quarter S&P 500 earnings growth of 4.1%, up from just 2.5% on Thursday. We've seen some high-profile misses from significant large-cap names, Detrick said, but under the surface, many of the smaller and mid-sized companies have been quite impressive with their earnings results. The door is cracked open on the possibility that we might see a more dovish Fed come December policies meeting, whereas a month ago that door was locked and slammed shut, he added. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 2.59% to 32,861. The S&P 500 gained 2.46% to 3,901. And the NASDAQ Composite added 2.87% to 11,102. Third quarter reporting season has passed the halfway point now, with 263 of the companies in the S&P 500 having reported. Of those, 73% have beaten consensus expectations. Intel jumped 10.7% after cutting its spending forecast, while T-Mobile US subscriber forecast hike sent its shares up 7.4%. And Twitter, of course, was delisted from the New York Stock Exchange, closing the book on Tesla chief Elon Musk's $44 billion purchase of the company. the VIX tumbled 6% to 25.75. The tech bloodbath is over, and Wall Street still seems to be confident the Fed is ready to downshift their tightening pace after they deliver a fourth consecutive 75 basis point rate hike next week, Anders Ed Moyer said in the note. Capital Economics Thomas Matthews, though, was cautious about the rebound. We don't think growth stocks' relative struggles are over, nor do we expect a further rebound in the broad stock market yet. A lot of this year's pain in growth stocks has also been due, in our view, due to the rise in real yields, which I think has largely run its course, Matthews said, but we are sceptical growth stocks' relative struggles are completely over. For one, their relative valuations are still high and earnings expectations for them are still too rosy to us. Oil prices eased about 1% on Friday after top crude importer China widened its COVID-19 curbs, though the crude benchmark still poised for a weekly gain on supply concerns and surprisingly strong economic data. Brent futures fell 0.9% to settle at $94.19, and US WTI crude fell 0.8% to $88.38. US gasoline futures dropped around 3%, while US diesel futures rose about 5% to their highest since mid-June. For the week, Brent rose about 2% and WTI was up about 3%. But Chinese cities ramped up COVID-19 curbs on Thursday. It's hard to make a case for a rebound in China's crude purchases given the backdrop of uncertainty over its zero COVID policy, said PVM oil analyst Stephen Brunnock. The International Monetary Fund expects China's growth to slow to 3.2% this year. That's a downgrade of 1.2% from its April projection after an 8.1% rise in 2021. PetroChina said China's demand for refined fuel and natural gas was set to grow year on year in the fourth quarter in tandem with an expected economic recovery as Beijing rolls out more stimulus policy and OPEC is maintaining its view that world oil demand will rise for at least another decade. The bullish case for gold futures is improving somewhat as financial markets begin to grow optimistic that the Fed will begin the deliberation of a slower pace of tightening. Gold could be on the verge of a major breakout, possibly, if the FOMC decision is supported by the non-farm payroll report at the end of the week. Gold has initial support at around 1,640, with the line in the sand being 1,620. The 1,680 provides major resistance for gold, followed by the 1,700 level. Additionally, gold futures fell 1.04% to 1,657. And the euro-US dollar traded flat at around 0.9975. In Europe, stock markets were a bit mixed on Friday, with sentiment hit by the large ECB rate hike, weak results from e-commerce giant Amazon, and a hefty drop in French quarterly growth. The DAX in Germany ended up 0.24% to 13,243, and the CAC 40 in France rose 0.46% to 6,273, while the FTSE in the UK traded 0.37% lower. French third quarter gross domestic product rose 0.2% on the quarter, according to data released on Friday. That's a gain of 1% on an annual basis. This represents a sharp slowdown from growth of 0.5% and 4.2% respectively in the previous quarter. Spain also registered a slowdown with its GDP growing just 0.2% in the quarter. That's a drop from 1.5% the previous quarter. The German economy, though, grew unexpectedly in the third quarter, according to the data released on Friday, as Europe's largest economy kept recession at bay despite high inflation and energy supply worries ahead of a looming European ban on Russian crude imports. The market remains wary of the impending deadlines for European purchase of Russian crude before the sanctions kick in on the 5th of December, ANZ research analysts said in the note. The tone had been set earlier after Amazon, widely seen as a bellwether for the global e-commerce industry, forecast late on Thursday a slowdown in sales growth for holiday season, warning that inflation-wary consumers and businesses had less money to spend. The company pointed out specifically Europe as likely to be its hardest-hit region this holiday season, with Germany and Britain its biggest markets after the US. The European Central Bank raised interest rates by 75 basis points again on Thursday and said it expects to increase them further as it continues to aggressively fight red-hot inflation, even as growth in the region slows dramatically. In the corporate sector, Volkswagen stock fell 4% after the German auto giant's third-quarter earnings were weighed down by $1.6 billion in one-off efforts from suspending activities in Russia and listing Porsche AG. NatWest stock slumped over 7% after the UK bank missed estimates for profit in the third quarter after booking a sharp rise in provisions against possible loan losses. Sanofi stocks rose 1.2% after the French drug maker forecast projected faster earnings growth this year on strong demand for its best-selling drug Dupixent and for its flu vaccines. Porsche stock fell 2.5% despite the luxury car maker reporting a 40% leap in operating profit to more than 5 billion euros in its first results since its stock market listing in late September. Inflation has hit double digits and remains the ECB's number one priority. The Eurozone releases its inflation report on Monday. Inflation rose to 10% in September and expected to be even higher, say 10.3% in October. Some analysts are expecting a possible surge to 11%. Core inflation is also projected to tick higher to 4.9%. And the Eurozone will also release the October final PMIs, which are projected to indicate contraction with readings below 50, of course, meaning a contraction. Manufacturing will be released on Wednesday and services on Friday. Manufacturing is expected around 46.6 and services at 48.2, confirming those initial estimates. And the UK final PMIs for October, with manufacturing on Tuesday, services on Thursday and construction on Friday, are also due out. That 50.0 line separates contraction from expansion. The initial readings were 45.8 for manufacturing and 47.5 for services, indicative of weak economic activity in the UK. Construction may provide a silver lining, with initial reading of 52.3 pointing to slight expansion there. But the highlight of the week will be the Bank of England's rates decision on Thursday. The Bank of England raised rates by 0.5% in September and is expected to go all in with a jumbo 0.75% hike, which could bring the cash rate to 3%. The vote could have two dissenters, which is why markets are expecting a downshift to a half-point pace in December. The UK actually may already be in a recession, and higher rates will hurt households and businesses, but the Bank of England has little choice but to continue tightening if it hopes to curb red-hot inflation, which is at 10.1%. In Asia, stock markets sank on Friday as Chinese cities introduced the new COVID-19 curbs, while a broader rout in technology stocks spilled over into Asia after a slew of weak earnings from US heavyweights. The end of the National Party Congress was as expected, with President Xi being confirmed for a third term and the Standing Committee reshaped to cement his authority. The initial reaction of markets was unfavourable, though this has dissipated a little. The hold that President Xi has over the party, China's development and COVID management is unnerving for many market participants. That said, in Q3, growth was more than a percentage point stronger than the market expectation, the 3.9% gain reversing quarter two's 2.7% loss. Year-to-date growth consequently bounced back to 3% and could be on its way to 3.5% for the full year, to be followed by 6% in 2023. From the GDP detail and monthly partial data, it's clear COVID management continues to pressure consumption and that residential construction is only starting to form some something of a base after the provision of considerable stimulus. Supporting growth currently is fixed asset investment, excluding housing and trade. While trade with the US and Europe is under pressure as these economies stall and or enter a recession, Asia has capacity to offset some of this. Not only does China stand to benefit from the region's organic growth, they're also looking to take a greater share of those markets for both consumer and industrial goods. China's decision to invest in and promote their own brands domestically over the past decade also provides a stronger foundation for their nascent Asian export expansion. So too the capital production and know-how they are developing with respect to the green transition, a process Asia stands to benefit material from. Of course, the greater China's interest in Asia becomes, the stronger their footing on the global stage. Geopolitical uncertainty is then expected to persist and potentially escalate in the years ahead. In addition, China reported 1,506 new cases on October 27th, the National Health Commission said on Friday, up from 1,264 new cases a day earlier. Strict anti-COVID measures are about to send China's factory activity back into contraction territory. The global growth outlook will struggle as China's economy shows their recovery is struggling, and both services and manufacturing data are expected to weaken in October. Currency traders will pay close attention to the PBOC as they have set the yuan reference rate at the weakest levels since 2008. Authorities want a strong yuan, but defending it could prove costly. They might need to consider narrowing the band. Shanghai's composite shed 2.25% to 2,915 as those cities were locked down. The move brews fresh concerns about the Chinese economy, which is still reeling from a series of COVID lockdowns this year. The Chinese government recently reiterated its commitment to the strict zero policy, keeping the country's economic outlook uncertain. Uncertainty over the country's political climate also weighed on Chinese stocks this week, putting them on course for that weekly loss. Hong Kong Hang Seng Index was the worst performer, actually, among its peers this week, down 3.66% on Friday to a near 14-year low, as local stocks were the worst hit by a rout in U.S. technology majors to 14,863. The index was also set to lose nearly 8% over the week, as technology majors including Alibaba, Baidu, Tencent, and JD.com were all hit hard by their exposures to U.S. markets. Other tech-heavy indices in Asia also slumped. The Taiwan Weighted Index dropped 1.5%, while South Korea's KOSPI fell 0.89% to 2,268. But the KOSPI actually was the best performer this week, rising nearly 3%, as dismal third-quarter GDP data spurred expectations that the Bank of Korea will soften its pace of interest rate hikes. Bucking the trend, India's Nifty 50 index rose 0.2%, supported by gains in major energy and consumer stocks. India's economic growth prospects, which are forecast to be far higher than most major economies this year, have largely buoyed Indian stocks this month. The Nifty 50 was all set to rise across the week. The Bank of Japan did not deliver any surprises. Both rates and the 10-year yield did not have any changes. The yen remains a volatile trade, and now the ball is in the Ministry of Finance's hands. With momentum growing for the Fed to shift to a slower pace of tightening in December, Japan may try to be aggressive in defending the dollar-yen 150 level. Traders will also pay close attention to the minutes of the latest BOJ decision. The two-year bond was knocking on zero at one stage, but there is no change of strategy there so far. In Australia, shares in the ASX mining giant sank on Friday after iron ore prices plunged to their lowest level since 2020, and major producer Vale posted a steeper-than-expected decline in quarterly profit. The world's second-largest iron ore producer reported adjusted earnings before items of $3.7 billion for the third quarter. That's down 47% from a year ago and well below the $4.6 billion average that analysts estimated. Iron ore prices have fallen more than 50% from a peak in March, and iron ore futures traded in Singapore fell 2.2% to $79.95 a tonne by Friday afternoon. Prices fell by as much as 4.7% on Thursday to the lowest level since May 2020. The ASX 200 shed 0.9% to 6,785 on Friday, but still managed to post a weekly gain of 1.6%. The local materials sector slumped 4% as Fortescue Metals Group fell 8.2% to 1476, BHP dropped 5% to 3748, and Rio Tinto declined 4.4% to 8855. Iron ore prices have continued to decline after recent negative commentary from Chinese steel mills and expectations high energy prices see further reductions in steel mill utilization rates, said Baden Moore, head of commodities research at National Australia Bank. Macquarie Group closed flat at $166.50 after reporting an interim net profit of $2.3 billion that was 13% lower than the previous half-year period. Juno Capital said its profit before tax for the September quarter exceeded $23 million, which was more than its pro forma profit of $15.6 million for the entire 2022 financial year. Shares in the bank also closed flat at $1.17. ANZ added 0.9% to 25.21. Commonwealth Bank rose 0.8% to 103.22. NAB climbed 0.3% to $32. And Westpac rose 0.9% to $23.99. Vicinity Centres reaffirmed its guidance for the 2023 financial year and said that customer visitations in the first quarter represent 86% of pre-COVID levels. The stock gained 4.3% to $1.95, and BrainChip Holdings released its third quarter results after the market closed on Thursday, reporting net operating cash outflows of $3.8 million for the 3 months. Shares in BrainChip plunged 21.2% to 67 cents on Friday. The day after the budget, the third quarter CPI came in well above the market's expectation, and critically, not only did headline inflation print at a challenging 1.8% or 7.3% over the year, but so did the trimmed mean, which was at 1.8 or 6.1% over the year. Key contributors to the rise were housing, utilities and dwelling construction, and food. However, there was evidence of robust to strong inflation across the rest of the consumer basket. So Westpac thinks it's going to be appropriate for the RBA to increase the cash rate by 50 basis points at its November meeting on Tuesday, and to follow that move with a further 75 basis points of cumulative tightening at the next three meetings, to a peak of 3.85% in March. That's up from its previous expectation of 3.6%. An on-hold posture will then be required over the remainder of 2023 to suppress inflation expectations and related risks. By the way, markets are seeing rates close to 4% into 2024. The focus will indeed be on the RBA policy decision on Tuesday. This meeting could have some added volatility as general consensus leans towards a 25 basis point rate hike, but a half point increase should not be ruled out. Inflation remains hot, and with the cash rate nowhere near inflation, the bank may feel more pressure to act aggressively. And New Zealand's third quarter employment change and unemployment rate data will come out next Wednesday. And as the overall inflation level in New Zealand remains high, the money markets have priced in either a half point or a 75 basis point rate hike at the RBNZ's next interest rate meeting on November the 23rd. The Kiwi is at 0.5814 against the US dollar, and the two-year New Zealand bond is at 4.368. That's up 0.77%. And finally, Bitcoin is forming a bit of a trading range around 20,000 US, as many investors await to see what happens with next week's market reaction to the FOMC decision. It was last at 20,612, while Ether was up to 1,556. What will draw some extra attention is the Hong Kong FinTech Week that includes appearances from FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, but could contain more insights on how Hong Kong will provide guidance on how retail crypto trading could be allowed. But crypto remains in the doldrums, at least for now. So if you stand back, you can see that on one hand, the markets are saying, no, the Fed is nearly over. But on the other hand, all of the signs are still there for more trouble ahead. So expect more volatility. I'm afraid that I don't think that the tech wreck is over yet. I expect to see more issues over the next few months, and therefore more downside risk is certainly in the market. But of course, there are many market participants who are just trying to talk the market up. Again, some things don't change. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.